You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
What's up, Launch Streeters? So good to talk to you again. Tamara here, your innovation guide and human spirit to a 90-pound mastiff named Zoe. She totally gets me. Okay, so here's my question to you. When do you think about marking off all those things on your to-do list? You know, things like making doctor's appointments, asking that online store where your order is, making reservations. If you're like me, it's at those odd hours of the day. Like for me, it's right when I get up. So it's at 4 a.m., but I can't do anything about it, right? Or it's after work hours at like 7 p.m. after I've put, you know, dealt with the kids and made dinner and all that. Can't do anything about it. I hate it. Well, so did Matt Tumbleson, founder of Text, a revolutionary technology in the customer service space. I actually got to meet him in person, which is why I wanted to have him on the show, because I know he would be so good. So he stopped by Inside Launch Street to talk to me about taking risks and what it takes to be a successful disruptor trying to transform a legacy industry or organization. I bet some of you feel like that in your own work and with your teams, right? Like, how do I move these legacy people and thinkers forward? He dropped some serious wisdom bombs around how to innovate within constraints versus always fighting them, how that's the better way to do it, and how caring about how you can help other people be more innovative is way more important than you being that lone innovator. That's the difference between, you know, feeling amazing about yourself and actually moving innovation forward. How partnership equals buy-in. Like I said, there's so many wisdom bombs in this conversation. I also really appreciated his comments around how innovation is what allows you to do more with fewer resources. So not having the money, time, or resources, not an excuse. Now, Matt's unique innovator archetype is an inquisitive imaginative. And you will totally hear it. You'll hear how challenging the assumptions of how business has to be done in customer service, how it's always been done, that's his inquisitive side, has helped him revolutionize the industry. And how his imaginative side, which is all about innovating the gaps where nothing exists, is what led him to creating his company, to creating the solution to the problem. He saw the problem by asking a question, digging deep, challenging those assumptions. And then he imagined the solution. He even says it. He says, I thought, what would that look like? It's such powerful stuff. Go get a notepad for this one. Let's do it. Matt, it is so good to talk to you again. Thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great to meet you a couple months back, and I'm glad to be on today.
I can't even believe it's already been a couple months, to be honest. I feel like, weren't we just in San Diego in the warm weather on the beach? No?
You know, I did take a break and go down and enjoy the waves, and I miss it so much
oh
now
my gosh.
That we're four layers and, you know, snow boots every day.
That's right. I just pulled out my Uggs. I was like, nope, season's changed. Season's changed. My Sorels. So Matt, let's start by getting to know you. What's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
So people, if it was the first time they met me, what I think they'd probably be surprised is my obsession with airplanes. Anyone who knows me really, really well is fully aware of it. I somehow managed to weave the new Airbus or the new Boeing into conversation a little bit too much. And whenever I talk about things like going on vacation, it's generally around which, you know, city has the newest airplane and the new seat configurations and things like that. I think growing up near NASA in Orlando made me obsessed with just, you know, space and air travel and all those things. And so I'm pretty obsessed. I spend about 30 minutes a day on the aviation subreddit on Reddit.
Wow. I'm a little surprised, and I've met you before, but I have to ask, are you interested in the historical side of flight too, or is it really more about the technology and what's next and looking forward?
It's mostly the technology. I do have a little bit of a background with, you know, just some of the World War II planes and things like that. And if you think about it, you know, it's been less than 100 years for us going from just kind of figuring out how to get this thing off the ground to, you know, a double decker that can fly 17 hours and has, you know, a bar in the back and showers in the front. It's kind of remarkable. So I really kind of like nerd out over all the future technologies that are coming out.
So maybe this
this will kind of weave into the answer to the next question. And I want to ask you this before we dig into your company, into Text. What draws you to the startup world?
It's a couple of things. I'm kind of like a, actually I took your assessment. I'm sure we're maybe gonna talk about that too. I really think that everything can always be better. And I almost need the freedom to be able to do that. So I've worked with large companies. I've worked for the government. I worked for small companies. And where I found I had the most success was anywhere that allowed me to kind of do what I needed to take an idea. It might even be something that already exists and just constantly improve and make it better. And what I really like about the startup world is that that's what, you know, hopefully around 100% of the companies are doing is they're taking something and making it better. There's always the thought of, you know, what's the problem? How can I fix it? And this is kind of the you know, ongoing way that we talk about things. And that just really is what drove me to it.
So you're talking about the startup world and like constantly kind of improving something. Do you think that half the battle is that kind of willingness to not have it be perfect right up front and your willingness to kind of constantly evolve it and actually kind of put the rubber to the road, so to speak, as you keep going?
I would say it really depends on the person. If you're the kind of person that obsesses over something being perfect, then no matter what anyone tells you, you're going to obsess over it. And that's okay. You look at a Steve Jobs type and you know, he built a $1 trillion company based on just perfecting the experience versus other companies. You know, you take the Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg types and they're thinking, okay, next, you know, major iteration, and things are constantly moving forward. And both are really, you know, good companies. I think it's more about the individual. I have a vision of what perfection should be, and I know that it's so far away, and I keep it almost so far in the future that it's not tangible, so that, you know, when I take a giant leap, my leap isn't to the finish line. My leap is a milestone towards it, and those milestones might go left, right, or center, but I keep that vision constantly in the future so that I know it's so far, I'm not going to get perfection in this stage.
So what mindset or attitude do you think that innovators inside organizations can learn from entrepreneurs like you?
So, you know, I think I've heard a couple of different things, different, you know, definitions and takeaways with what the definition of entrepreneur is. And, you know, to be honest, when I first started Text, I didn't think about I'm an entrepreneur. I thought more of I'm the kind of guy who constantly comes up with ideas and hasn't actually taken the leap to do something. But I actually had made major improvements inside of companies that I worked in before without having to start my own company. So I think that you can be an entrepreneur, which is, I had to actually look it up, even though I always call myself an entrepreneur, I looked it up for today. And the number one tenet is just a risk taker. Huh. And I think that, you know, being able to take risks, of course, means that you potentially have, you know, reward. And that's the whole point of taking a risk. But you may not. And so I think that you can make smart risks. I think you can make educated risks. I think that you can have a process to your risk and still take a risk, but have a higher probability of outcome. And that's something I learned from Ryan Scott, the former CMO at my last company, Seamless Grubhub, where he said, I don't mind if you want to take a risk, but I need to understand your process, your thinking, length of time, you know, what is at risk? So, you know, if you spend time doing that, what are you not spending time doing? And that really helped me kind of put together my process and formula for my own risk. And that's what I would recommend to people is think about how much risk are you willing to tolerate? Probably double that, because someone will walk you back to the 50% mark, have a process around doing it. And then just think to yourself, you know, what's the potential reward for me, for the company, for my department, for this project? And then what's the, you know, what is the ultimate risk if we do this or don't do this?
Do you think that sometimes with risk, just as you're talking, it was making me think that it's not really, it's risky in the sense of we could lose everything. It's more just simply risky in the sense that we don't actually know what the outcome is. So the feeling is risky. We don't know if it's going to work or not work, no matter how smart it may be or how much you've thought through it. And that's what we perceive as risk.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's an unknown. And so it could be we could lose everything, you know, the shirt off our back. And I think that's a very startup kind of risk, where, you know, it goes against your better judgment. It goes against, you know, having, you know, helping your family and being a breadwinner and, you know, whatever it might be, or just contributing to society by, you know, being a part of the economic system. As an entrepreneur, we're oftentimes not really doing that. But that doesn't mean that you can't do that internally in a company. And it doesn't mean you have to kind of, you know, put your own money and start a business and get shareholders to take a risk and have an unknown. That's just the level. It's almost if there's an equilibrium, the level of a startup founder is kind of to the max. But that doesn't mean that everyone has to be to the max in order to really kind of, you know, kind of have an unknown and then create a change.
What inspired you to start Text?
So my background story is, you know, I've always been kind of a product guy, thinking about making things better, which is why, you know, I kind of thought that my, you know, I'm really good at making things incrementally better over time. So, you know, take my first job at the Miami Herald, a new newspaper in the early 2000s. Well, what's the outcome of that? And so if I take my future vision and I say, well, what could this be? How will people be, you know, kind of digesting this information in the next 10 or 15 years? It wasn't on that printed paper. And so I helped launch Miami.com, which was that kind of first iteration of newspapers moving over to websites. And I've been doing that ever since. And so when I was at Seamless, this was the first startup that I had worked in that was in the traditional tech space. And I just, you know, I learned so much. I was a part of the merger team when we, you know, acquired Grubhub when it was originally Seamless here in New York. You know, I was on the IPO team. I got to see, you know, what all that looked like and all the work that went into it. And I said, wow, here's a $4 billion business that is publicly traded on the New York Stock Exchange with the premise of the phone call isn't good enough. And with that information, you know, we started kind of overlaying that with all of our customer experiences, or our diner experiences, as we called them, and said, okay, diners don't like to call. But we have customer service issues, and the first thing we do is we tell them to call. And you know, kind of armed with the information and data of, we built this business, but the reason why we can't let them do anything but call is because there's no way for them to do anything else. They can't text us. You know, Twitter was, you know, tiny at the time and still is just around 2% of all customer service. So where are consumers actually at? Where are they spending their time? They're spending their time inside their mobile phone, their smartphone, texting and messaging. And so when I started looking for something that could do this for us, nothing existed. And I thought, wow, this is such a basic idea and such a transformation of the way that consumers could actually contact businesses, not just, you know, Seamless, Grubhub, or, you know, any other business in the world, for customer service, but for acquisition, for asking questions, for just everything could be switched over to texting. And so, you know, I was really kind of just shocked that this didn't exist and felt like it was kind of, here's my time to start this company specifically for solving this problem, for changing the way the world communicates and bringing it out of just the consumer sphere and making it in the business sphere as well.
I think you and I were having this conversation in San Diego at the conference about, if you look at people's cell phones, if you looked at my cell phone, the phone is not even on that bottom bar, you know, the kind of get to the app quickly bar.
Yeah.
It's not even on there. It's like a million other things, but not that, because that's not what I do every single day. In fact, I called the least, but was it you who was saying that we've far exceeded in text, like the amount of time we text versus call?
Yeah. And that was in 2007. So it's been years. But if you also look at 2007, the number one kind of tech thing that happened that year was the launch of the iPhone. And so, you know, when you take a kind of, you know, very perfectionist, business-minded person like Steve Jobs, he was, you know, so far ahead of his time, but he understood consumer behavior. You know, it wasn't that the iPhone alone shifted everyone into texting. He noticed that it was the texting, and you know, that's why he shifted into smartphones. He followed the consumer. He was just one step ahead, knowing that that's where they would go next. And so I was mind boggled when I said, wait a minute, it's been all these years and customer service still asks, you know, generally call us on this 1-800 number. Well, goodness, how many phone calls can one person handle at a single time? One, you know? And so it's like, we can have you order you know, 300,000 orders of food in a single day. But if you need to contact us, if all of those customers had to contact us by phone, we'd be out of business. So how is it that we're innovating and all these companies, all these tech companies are innovating everything, but then when it comes down to the actual communication between the business and their consumer, there was nothing for the way the consumer is actually doing it, which is on texting. And I just looked at the bottom bar, kind of the main bar on my phone. To the left, which is right where my thumb goes, is of course texting. You know, that's my number one. And then I have email with far too many emails I haven't replied to, Safari and camera. And that's, you know, collectively right there, probably 75% of my life on my mobile device.
So here's what I want to dig into, and just bear with me as I kind of stumble through the question for you, but I'm so fascinated by this. So, and I want to dig a little bit into your innovator archetype now that you're sharing that story and your results of being imaginative and inquisitive as your two power. So one of the things you were just talking about is you realized, hey, wait a minute, there's a disconnect. You've got, you know, people who wanted to reach out to you, but not by phone. And the only solution for them is the phone right now, really, for customer service. And the solution that you created is very new. It was very novel, right? It was the idea of taking this third application and applying it in a way that hadn't been applied. And that's a very imaginative trait of I can create something from scratch, right? Like it doesn't yet exist, but I'm going to create it. And my question to you in that, because I think it's so powerful, is when you're doing that, what's your thought process? Because to be able to see a problem and then applying a solution that's never happened before is really transformative.
And a lot harder when you start putting it into practice versus just kind of thinking about it, which is a whole separate question in terms of, I think, right team and right, you know, resources and tools to take an idea and actually move it forward. For me, it was, you know, I walk to the gym every morning before work and I'm an early riser. You know, I'm of that kind of persona. I like to get up. I like to walk the dog and do things. And so I found myself day after day wanting to achieve something during my walk, but I wanted to listen to my music. And, you know, I'm a multitasker, so there's no reason I can't browse through Spotify and listen to the new tracks while also doing something else. And I remember one day thinking to myself, I need to contact the airline because I need to change my flight. I need to contact Lyft because I was billed twice on the most recent ride. You know, I had these things I needed to contact businesses with. And then, of course, I have to get on the train and go into Seamless and, you know, try to figure out how we can get our customers to contact us in a way other than calling. And these all kind of went together. And I just thought to myself, I'm staring at my phone. You know, I'm texting my friends. I'm texting my family. I wouldn't call, you know, it's kind of really early in the morning or, you know, midday at work, depending on the time. Do I just start with, you know, what if a business had a mobile phone? Like, what would that look like if there was a single mobile phone inside of this contact center of 1,000 agents, you know, and they let's start with that, just the baseline of what I know the person on the other end of my conversation with a friend, I know they have a phone, and I know that phone number, I can call it or I can text it, but I, of course, choose to text it. And then I took that and I said, well, what makes them capable of doing this? And I kind of just broke it down into parts, you know, kind of like, I don't know, like not in, you know, mechanical parts, but in, you know, where does the text go? What is the processor on the machine? And then what does it look like in a customer service, you know, kind of situation where there are 1,000 people and they're all staring at a screen and they're all on Salesforce or Oracle or Zendesk or one of these CRMs. And that's where the light bulb went off of, you know, I don't need to get them cell phones. I just need to get them the texting portion of a phone into their computer, into the screen that they're looking at. And everything for the last 3 years has been just trying to figure out how to do that and how to make it better, because it wasn't as easy as I thought. It's been actually significantly more complex. Just telecom is, you know, old. We're basically building, you know, 21st century technology on top of, 20th century technology. So we're really trying to create amazing experiences on some old technology. And so we've had to do a lot of things to figure out how to make that, you know, the reality of the expectation of what a consumer would have the same as what an agent would have. But that's where I started. Just what if I took this, you know, tiny little thing, and how would I get 1,000 people to use this app at once? And that's where we started.
I love it. So that's your inquisitive side coming out in your archetype, right? You innovate by asking questions, and people like you who do that are really good at challenging assumptions, because we go, well, that's how it's done. And you're like, yeah, but what if it wasn't? Like, what if it was a little bit different? What if, and how would I do that if I connected the dots in that way? It's so cool to hear. So you mentioned about putting new applications on legacy systems. And I know that, you know, you've got this revolutionary platform that I think in a lot of ways really just connects the dots to how we as people behave nowadays, but is also working in a legacy environment, a legacy industry, lack of a better way to say it, like you said, just archaic technology. And I'm curious what lessons you've had along the way about being kind of more of a disruptor in a legacy industry.
So, you know, I think the first thing is that, you know, the reason the industry is kind of a laggard compared to most others really is because there's a monopoly on the kind of back end systems. It's not because the people in the industry aren't wanting change. Every time we meet with a new, you know, SVP of customer service, they are just all about ideas and fixing things and making things work. And they're just, they've come to the point where they're used to constantly getting no, you know, internally from, you know, budget reasons, or they can't. And so it's not that the people aren't, you know, inquisitive or imaginative or, you know, capable of coming up with ideas and innovating. They just don't have, they can't. It really is beyond their, you know, capabilities, and their scope. And that's why I think being an outsider, someone who's overseen customer service, overseen marketing and product and, you know, the whole life cycle of a customer, coming in and creating something new that's really easy for them to use. And that was my number one thing is, you know, when you create anything, you have to think about who it's for. So is this for the end consumer? Is this because I want it to be easy for my friend, you know, Joe, to be able to message American Airlines? No. Who my end user is actually customer service agents or people inside of a business. So that's the person who I'm asking, would it be easier if I put this here or did this here or walk me through your business process? And so I think that they see us, you know, Text as one of the first companies who actually comes to them and says, let's innovate together. Let's just connect the pieces and we will help you innovate. We will help your brand be viewed as innovative. We will help your customers say great things about you on social media instead of complaining there. Let's give them another place to get something solved so they can use the social for good. And I think that's why innovation for us has been so fast in the space, because the people in the space are constantly kind of, you know, cheering us on, saying, well, let's, you know, what do you think about this? They're always giving us their ideas. So Text is almost a culmination of so many inputs from different people in the customer experience world that's why I think, you know, I said that we walk into a room and people like cheer and they're excited to see us, because they know that we're going to leave that event or that networker or, you know, that conference, and we're going to do something that's going to positively impact them, you know, in a couple of weeks, in a couple of months, or in a couple of years. But they'll see the results of their conversation, you know, manifest in some kind of new innovative way.
You know, Matt, there's a couple of things you said in there that I just want to take a pause and highlight, because I think they're so powerful. One is your recognition of the fact that it's not the people who don't want to be innovative. It's the systems and the legacy processes that they have to deal with that are making it hard for them to move the needle at all. And I think sometimes we forget that, you know, we as humans really do want to be innovative and we want to contribute and be creative and solve problems. And sometimes we've got a box that we have to deal with. And that box can, you know, be super frustrating. But I think that recognition is really important that you said that.
Yeah. And I was actually just listening to your podcast where thinking outside the box and thinking inside the box. And, mm-hmm. you know, if I work for a company and my boss comes to me and says, we use Slack and that's just what we use and that's it, I have two options. I can either, you know, use Slack or I can innovate Slack. Either or, but it's kind of outside my control. And I can, you know, put forward an idea to use something else, But if I'm told these are your constraints, then you are a little bit limited. And so with text, I wanted to be sure that we didn't create, you know, this kind of amazing utopia of customer service that no company would be able to use.
So we actually, what's the point of that?
Yeah. You know, everyone's like, oh, cool. That's awesome. We'd love to have that. But it doesn't work with our systems. It doesn't work with our constraints. And so I think the way that we were able to really, by not being an insider and, you know, by being an outsider with experience, you know, more in the startup sphere, I was able to interview these customer service agents and leaders and say, what are your constraints? And let me make sure I'm innovating within those so that we're going kind of, you know, you don't have to replace all your systems. So we partnered with Oracle. We partner with Salesforce, we partner with Microsoft, and we can bring our innovation to companies through those more legacy systems. They don't have to change, you know, every single thing in their org to use our products, but they still get access to, you know, something that is helpful in 2017 and beyond.
Oh my God, I'm totally geeking out. I'd be jumping up and down if I didn't have a headset on right now with what you're saying, because to me, like, the whole thing is, I hate outside the box. It drives me crazy. You saw my keynote, you know, I'm all about how do we rearrange the box that we have, because right. We have it, right? The reality is it's there, but it kind of leads to the other thing, I think, that was so powerful with what you said, which is you partner with your clients so that they're the ones innovating too. I think all too often as the innovators, whether we already work inside a company or we're an entrepreneur or startup, right, trying to partner, is we tend to come in with this, here's how brilliant and innovative I am and my work and my product. But that is just pushing your ideas onto somebody else versus allowing them to be a part of the journey and a part of the ideas and a part of the innovation. And what I heard you say, and I would venture to say part of the reason you're so successful and had, you know, so many great client relationships and more coming, is that you're willing to open up the door and say, hey, let's do this together. Let's be innovative together. Let's figure this out and put it into their hands too.
Yeah, I truly believe in partnership in all business. And I think it's almost a personality trait more than anything. I think that, you know, the whole idea of 1+1=3, you know, it's so overused, but it just makes sense. And sometimes it needs to be the right 1+1. You know, if I come to a business and I say, hey, I'm a partner, but I'm really just thinking about myself, then that's not really being a partner. And on the flip side, you know, if there's a business that says, yeah, we totally partner, we want to be with you, you know, and then they try to pull one over on us or do something that's not very partner-like, that's not 1+1=3. And so we actually, when we meet with prospects, we tell them, you know, this isn't like we just set it and forget it. If you have a problem, if you have an idea, you contact us. Here's all the mobile phone numbers of everyone that works here. No joke. Contact us at any time. Here's who does what. Feel free. Here's your point of contact. But if they're unavailable, you know, you can call me. Like, they have the CEO's information. And I met with a company recently, a major, major publishing company here in New York, and they were comparing us to another company, a publicly traded one. And they said, what's the difference between, you know, both your products? And I said, I could walk you through probably 5 different things that are different features, things like that. You know, we've been around longer. They have live chat and other things like that they work on. And we're just, you know, mobile messaging. And I said, did their founder come here to your office and sit here with you? Will their founder be there on launch day with you? And on the flip side, I said, I expect your feedback. I expect you to also be okay with our hiccups, and I'll be honest and transparent with you. But I need you to help innovate with me. This is that kind of a partnership. And we've let clients go who were very, very one-sided and didn't want to share any of the information or anything like that. And I said, where we're at is we're creating a vertical that never has existed before. And, you know, you've got to be on board with us. And I would say probably, you know, 99 out of 100 times, the companies are totally on board. And for some reason, we've just been blessed that these really innovative companies gravitate towards us and vice versa. And we've been able to make those connections. And so, you know, I had a client recently who said, I'm really bad at presentations. I went to their office. I helped him with his presentation. I'm really good at them. Nothing to do with what we do. But then, you know, he had an idea for something that we should do that was going to help his 400 agents. And of course, we took it and it went into our product roadmap, and now it's made us better. So I believe it is a very personal thing when I say partnership. That's what I'm looking for from our clients.
Well, I think for launch shooters out there listening, that is so important to get buy-in to your ideas, is what Matt is saying here around it. Really, you got to think of these things as a partnership. And just to, you know, kind of loop it back to the conversation about risk. I think that oftentimes too, when there's a black curtain, we're saying, we're going to do all this stuff. Here's the features and benefits. Here's what the outcome's going to be, but you don't include them behind the black curtain. It feels a lot riskier, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Right, right. And risk is something that, you know, every company has a different kind of tolerance level. But again, you know, when you think about a company that's maybe doing $300, $400, $500 billion in revenue a year, they're probably okay with, you know, if you think about the numbers here, you know, like 10 million up or down, which is a huge amount of money that you can put towards something to risk. It's the much, much smaller companies where our goal is to help them kind of double, you know. And how do you take a company that's doing $5 million a year and get to $10 million a year? It's actually a lot easier, because it's just, they have momentum, and you know, it's only $5 million, which is actually not crazy. So there's different kind of risk tolerances in different businesses for different reasons. And I think getting people on board for that requires as much transparency as possible, because risk tends to be, you know, a multi-party system where it's never just a single person taking a risk. That's, you know, one startup founder at a WeWork coming up with an idea, creating some landing pages and having people kind of click on things. That's not real yet. You know, that's a pre-traction business. So when you're larger, you know, there's a lot more risk with multiple people. And so I think the more you can be transparent with everyone about the risk, and we're also talking about it like it's jumping off a cliff. It's not. You know, sometimes a risk is like, you know, do we go with blue or do we go with yellow? You know, either of those could be a risk. But which one is going to have the better outcome? And that's what you're really trying to solve for. You could be one that's great and one that's okay, but both ultimately are moving you forward.
You know, it's funny. I was just having a conversation with someone the other day, and I was saying that, you know, risk can sometimes feel like raising your hand in a meeting and saying, I disagree with all of you. You know,
oh, yeah.
And here's why. Because it is, you know, you're going against the consensus and against the grain. It, to your point, it really doesn't have to be off a cliff.
Right, right. And we created this system that we use selectively. I wish we used it more often, but it's this methodology of we encourage you to disagree. However, you have to have another idea. It doesn't have to be better. It just has to be another idea. So it's forced. Well, it's kind of forced, but also when talking about inside the box, if you just say no and you don't know why, it's a hunch, it's a feeling, but you can't describe it. What we ask is, you're allowed to say no, but learn, you know, here's some criteria to describe it that we can all kind of agree on. So we created our core values as a company. And this started out with just writing some things on a board. And, you know, we all raised our hands if we agreed with it. And, you know, if one person didn't agree, they say, I agree, you know, help your fellow texter. But I think it would be better if it was help your fellow texter inside and outside of work. And it's like, oh, okay, that's great. That's actually improving it. So it's not a no, it's a yes and, which can also get into a whole other direction. But we've created the foundation for allowing people to say no, which then coincidentally makes people say no and improve things more often. So that's one thing that we've learned that was a pretty good trick.
I just want to dig into that for a second, because you're right. We could go off on so many tangents here, Matt. There's so much to talk about. We might have to have you on again. but I used to run this consulting firm, and actually in my company now, I should say, but this in the back in the days where it started, I used to get really frustrated because people would come into my office and say, here's my problem, and they'd dump it on me, but they wouldn't have thought through the solution. They came to meet the problem. So I made a rule that you could come to me with your problem, of course, but you first had to think about and test out three different solutions. Then you could come to me. And what we discovered happened, and what I've now led into my company now, is that, first of all, people can solve their own problems. It's really amazing when they're given the room to do it. They'll do it. And second, we came up with all these innovative solutions that would have never been thought of had we just kind of dumped the problem. So so, and I think that's a little bit of what you're saying of, hey, you can say no and have the problem, and you can't be lazy. You got to think through the solution too. But it sounds like you get other benefits out of it as well.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. You know, because what it's done is it's really, like I said, it's created kind of the platform, which I think, you know, people, and this is going back to thinking inside the box, when it's an unlimited expanse of, you know, mental capacity, that's a lot to ask from everyone all the time. And, you know, all of our kind of mental processes go in different directions. By creating just a simple rule of course you can come to me, but you must have tried three different things, or we encourage you to say no to, or to improve this, you know, to put a better idea forward. We've actually been able to move forward faster because we're not spending time on, you know, I don't know, these little things that could get into these conversations that go nowhere. It's always thinking about momentum forward. And so we encourage those things. And I think also, you know, to kind of echo what you said about you must do three things, you also need a forum to talk about what you did. I think that's really important, because risk or experimentation inside a vacuum is only good for one person. And it's really important that it gets out to everyone, because someone might make the same mistake again over and over again, or they might have been looking for a solution and here you found it. And again, it might be your solution works great for you in that situation, but at least it can directionally move them in a better place. So we have a Monday morning meeting every week. And we do IDSing, which is like we put things up on the board, and we, you know, anything that jumps out that we all want to put up there, we put up. And then we raise our hands around the thing, the top three that we want to talk about. And we talk about those. And it tends to be, it's completely, you know, non-verticalized by department. And so everyone in the company can help solve a sales problem, or can help solve an engineering problem by giving their input or talking about something that they did once that worked. And you know, it's actually helped us a lot. I think we don't repeat mistakes nearly as much as we used to.
I love that. And I also think that, I don't know if this was accidental or intentional, but oftentimes we ignore the people who see the holes and the challenges. We see them as yes butters, they don't buy into our vision, they're just naysayers, they're in a negative mood, whatever. But the truth is, we need a way to leverage them, because the holes and the perspective that they have is actually really important to strengthen the idea. But what you've done is given them a forum to see the holes and then try to fix them, as opposed to just see the holes, which is, I think, where we see a lot of the clash around the people like me who are like, anything's possible. And people like that who are like, yeah, but have you thought about this?
Yeah. And we've, you know, I'm very much the anything is possible.
Yeah.
And if you look at my executive team, they're also the anything is possible. And so too many of those, and I've actually told the team, you can't let the captain sink the ship. You know, like it's okay to poke holes in things, and where we're at as a startup is you're expected to. So even in interviews, we'll sometimes pose interesting scenarios where, you know, someone has an idea and it's not in your department and you don't agree and you have a better idea. What do you do? And, you know, we eventually, of course, talk about our Monday meeting. But we look for people who would say something and offer a really good suggestion or a better idea. We don't kind of frown on that. We need a good mixture of kind of, you know, perspectives on things. And so I don't see it as poking holes in a negative way. I see it as preventing a ship to sink, you know. And I think when you put it that way, people are more, you know, willing to kind of give you their ideas or their input, even though, you know, I hate titles. I hate titles. And so I'm the CEO for the first time. And when I first, you know, started the company, people were like, oh, you're the CEO. And I was like, yeah, I'm the least experienced person here, because all of you have done your role or your job for at least a couple of years. I'm day one. So, you know, help me. If I do something that you think could be done better, or you have an idea, you know, bring it to me. And you know, let's kind of figure this out together.
This is such great advice, launch readers, for how to build a team that I think has trust, which I think ultimately then leads to innovation, because I don't think you can have the innovation without the trust. So this is so good. Before I dig into kind of my final questions, I wanted to ask you, when clients or potential clients, I should say, call you, or they're willing to meet with you, what problem are they trying to solve, or what are they looking to get out of it? Why are they willing to have the conversation?
So, you know, we are really solving, we're kind of a bridge builder, and the problem that's so many companies have now. You take these large enterprises who have been around for, you know, some of them 100 years, and things have kind of always been the same. And, you know, the internet was something that they kind of didn't understand, and then they dove into and they, you know, figured out, or they could hire teams or acquire companies. The messaging side, the mobile first or the mobile only, is really where they're struggling. So it's not about making their website mobile friendly. It's about actually having an ongoing relationship with consumers on that smartphone. And if you think about it, you know, they have your mailing address from all these years, and so they can send you catalogs. They have your email. None of those work. And so now that consumers have adopted smartphones as kind of their primary communication tool, it's all of these large brands are having to redevelop relationships for the first time. And so what we do is we allow them to have a forever relationship with that consumer on the same channel that they have a forever relationship with their mom or their sister or their husband or their wife, because those have shifted from phone and you know, traditional mail and things like that into that device as a forever conversation. And if you look at your text, they just go on forever. That's what we're helping these brands do. So you take, you know, a CPG brand that's, like I said, 100 plus years old. They don't know how to kind of, you know, link up. We have all these products and all these brands, and we have all these consumers. They don't know how to make that connection. And so what we're really selling is the bridge between those products and the consumers, so that those brands can have a forever conversation with their consumers.
Why do you think innovation is such a key factor in today's fast-paced marketplace?
So, you know, innovate or die, you know, it's kind of like a common saying. I think that it's almost easy, and I know I'm going to eat these words in probably like a year or two. It's almost easy because so many businesses aren't. If everyone was innovating at the same time, we would have chaos. Yeah. But there's actually cars that are going in the slow lane, and there are cars that are stopped, and they're completely parked on the side of the road. So for those of us
analogy.
Who are in, you know, like a race car in the fast lane, just, you know, hauling ass around all of them, we're able to innovate at least what is perceived as a relatively faster rate than a lot of other companies. And so I think that innovation is key for brand presence. People want to be working with innovative companies. Consumers are looking for new things, new experiences. If you can be a part of that kind of, you know, jet set innovation club, you can get to the front a lot faster without as much money and resources. And so I think for industry today, innovation is just kind of the thing that's happening at the smaller level at a million miles an hour. And like I said, the big companies just can't keep up, which is, it's sad. And we're helping to be the connector. But that's why it's completely driving so many things. You know, I heard about a hotel conference recently where all they talked about was millennials and what millennials want. And there's a hotel brand called the Ace Hotel. They don't really care about what millennials want. They are creating the thing that millennials want without having to really, you know, do all these research studies. They are, you know, because they're a smaller brand. But you take like a giant Marriott and they're like, oh, okay, how many more research studies should we be doing? And although I think, you know, research is important, we get to be the Ace Hotel right now. And we get to be the ones that are kind of creating innovation and being at the front of the pack with all the other innovators. And we are the ones that are changing the way that consumers are interacting with brands.
I also feel that, and maybe this is my ad days baggage coming back, but when you start to ask those questions like, what do the kids want? What do millennials want? That's when you get really tone deaf, insensitive things like the Pepsi ads and the Dove ads. I don't think it's people maliciously doing things wrong. It's just when you start from that question of like, ooh, what can we do to be the cool new innovative thing for the cool new innovative group of people? It almost destines you to fail in some ways.
Yeah, it does. And I've actually, speaking of advertising, you know, when I was at Seamless, I created about 3 years worth of ads that were very much what the kids are doing, but not because we were trying to figure out what the kids are doing or what the kids are talking about. I just made ads that I thought were great. And, you know, I just looked one up today. It was a Zoolander reference about, you know, what is this, a kitchen for ants?
And how can they learn to read if they can't fit into the building?
Exactly. Exactly. And it said, you know, or download our app. It's at least three times, you know, better than cooking it. So it was, I just thought it was hilarious.
That is funny.
You know, and it's like, it didn't matter.
And I'm not a millennial, like, and I think it's funny.
Right. And so it's like when you, I just thought it was funny, and everyone I showed it to thought it was funny, and that was part of our brand. And so I didn't say, well, what are the millennials? And so people followed our brand, and you know, they felt a bond with me through what we were creating. And I think that's also a lot of the reason why people choose text, is because it's very much, you know, a me or their account executive or their account manager. They kind of believe and they understand that these are the people that are doing the innovation. And we don't need to necessarily go out and constantly pull what the millennials are doing. What I care about is, what are you as a customer service agent frustrated with? Because I can come up with innovation all day, but without that feedback from you, it doesn't really matter what the kids are doing.
So where can people go to connect with you and learn more?
So LinkedIn, you know, LinkedIn is like huge right now, and it's the easiest place. It's my full name, Matthew Tumbleson. I can't, you know, not mention texting, of course. That's kind of where I live. So you can also text me at 917-971-3557, and that will get me directly, or you can text with text, which is 855-980-6848. We genuinely believe in what we're doing, and you know, feel free to text us on either line and we'll get back.
I just love that you're the first person to ever put your number on our podcast. So I just have to tell you though, I love that you did that, because you're really walking the talk of what you just talked about earlier about the change in our behavior and connecting and the partnership. So I hear those words a lot from people, but you're the first one to have done that. So I'm going to like props to that. So my last question to you is, I want to dig into your archetype for a second. You took the IQE, and your innovator archetype was imaginative and inquisitive. So imaginative being you create transformative ideas from scratch, which we, I think, heard you talk about in your story around, you know, moving forward past the, you know, people wanting to pick up the phone and coming up with a new idea. And I think also in the inquisitive is you tend to, what I'm hearing you do is ask a lot of questions of, how do I do this? What if? But how come it's this way? And innovating in that way. I'm curious, from your perspective, just in one or two sentences, how being imaginative and being inquisitive has helped you succeed.
I'm just going to echo essentially what you said. You know, I had an idea, and the way that I got to it was by asking these questions. Why not? How do we do this? How can we do this better? What would it look like if, and, you know, whiteboarded these questions. What would it look like if you could text a business tomorrow? What would it look like if you could text a business in 5 years? And what do you expect those, you know, kind of relationships to look like from a consumer standpoint, from a business standpoint? And we've just been kind of paving a road to answer those questions to get towards our, you know, final goal of having every business on this.
I love it. So what's one thing launch readers can do today to disrupt their worlds?
Really good question. So I would say this is a kind of an inverse, if you will. I like to sometimes just take a break from innovating and almost de-innovate or un-innovate. And we call this, you know, having a terrible idea. Sometimes you should just have a terrible idea, have a brainstorm, or think about, what is the worst way that we could fix our accounting problem? Or what is the worst way that we can tell people about our business? And when you kind of do that, it's another kind of box that you have to live in, but it helps you then write out terrible ideas, which come a lot faster than great ideas. You flip it upside down and you have a great idea. So start with the terrible version of something, reverse it, and there is an innovative idea.
Oh my God, I love what you just said. That is the best advice I've heard in a long time. It's fantastic. So come up with a terrible idea and then flip it. That feels so much easier than trying to be so incredibly innovative out of the gate.
Right. I mean, just pointing at someone and saying, go be innovative. That's really hard.
Scary.
That's really hard. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Matt, this has been fantastic. I've learned so much today. Thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And I will talk with you soon.
I know, right? So much wisdom here. I totally appreciated the part where Matt talks about how to be a disruptor in a legacy organization. Don't you want to be that disruptor? Move everything forward, shake things up. I think we know we either have to disrupt or be disrupted. So let's be the disruptors. So if you're that person trying to move the needle forward, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to gotolaunchstreet.com, gotolaunchstreet.com. Link is in the show notes. Click on our innovation assessment and take our assessment so you can discover your unique innovator archetype. It's your competitive advantage. It's how you bring your A game, your innovative self to work. Matt has totally leveraged his inquisitive, imaginative innovation strengths to be this amazing innovator. And you can do the same. It starts with you, the human side of innovation and how you innovate. You can have that same advantage and be that go-to innovator. Get be recognized as the one that has those solutions. Remember, being innovative is what helps you go further, faster with less. Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.